Welcome to our second episode of Working Progress. We're so happy that you decided to join us. Today, I'm delighted to welcome, as our special guest, Dr. Michael Abelson. Dr. A, can I call you that?
Absolutely.
All right. Dr. A has been part of the network for over 20 years and is the CEO, president, and founder of the Abelson Group. His company's been in business for about 45 years, or you have more than 45 years of experience, we'll say, in helping to guide organizations making decisions about their most important asset, their people. And today, we're going to talk about retention, and this is something that you're very passionate about, right?
Most definitely.
Great. So thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Me too. So let's get right into it. Why are you so passionate about retention of all things?
Well, it's interesting. Before I went back and got my MBA and PhD, I actually had real jobs. And and what I noticed was in most organizations, they spend a lot of time hiring somebody, but then they kind of forget about the people after that. And they hope that it's going to be money that keeps them there, and they assume that they're going to enjoy what they do and they really like what they do. But what I noticed was that that really wasn't the case, and there were people who were having difficulty and they would leave because of management, they would leave because of other issues, and I kind of felt that myself, you know, with some of these jobs. So in my PhD, you have to do a major paper. You have to do a major research. So I decided to look at turnover and retention. So I actually looked at why people leave, and I did a longitudinal study where I measured people at a couple different times, and then I looked to see what was going on. So that's where I started with it, but that was a long time ago, and what has happened and what we spend a lot of our time with is to help organizations not just hire the right people, but you don't want to have a bucket where you have a hole in the bottom, where you spend a lot of time, okay, making sure that they get into the bucket,
right,
but then they leave because you're not caring about them and you're not dealing with them appropriately, right? So what we do is we spend a lot of time on helping our clients really understand how to keep them engaged, how to keep them happy, and to keep them there, and to use ways to do that other than money.
I think that's brilliant.
Because they're going to get paid no matter where they are.
Right.
The issue then becomes, how do you help them, all right, after you've paid them? The reality of it is, if you look at research and you look at compensation, no matter how much you pay somebody, even if you overpay them, within 3 or 4 months, they rationalize that they deserved it anyhow. Okay? And what happens with that is once somebody assumes, right, or expects it, it's no longer a reward.
Mm.
It's an expectation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And at that point, the benefit of it really goes away. So then now you've created a foundation and you've upped the ante, so to speak. Now it's time to get them to be motivated. So you're going to do it with more money? Well, there's a limit to what you can do that, because after a while, the organization can't function because its payroll is too high.
Sure. So let's pause and take a step back.
Okay.
We can tell you're passionate. This is good. This is going to be a great conversation. So we kind of jumped right into it. And what I think you're saying, and I just want to kind of level set and make sure that everybody's on the same page. When we're talking about retention, we're talking about keeping employees, keeping team members, and it's not just keeping them, right?
Right.
It's, I think, and I think a lot of what we're hearing in the news and in studies that we're seeing, and just from colleagues or from friends at organizations, it's more than just keeping them. It's, how do I get this person to be engaged and be someone who's really passionate about what they're doing and providing value to the company? Is that what you're talking about, or would you define retention in a different way?
No, most definitely, because you want them to be engaged. You want them to be motivated to do work, especially in our current environment where there's so much working from home, right? And you can't observe what they're doing anymore. You just have to, quote unquote, assume that they're getting their job done. Well, it's really important to have it set up so they're motivated to do the job without you being there to observe what's going on. In fact, it's really an opportunity, because one of the important aspects about high quality employees is they need to feel respected, and they need to feel that the organization cares about them and trusts them. right? It's a leadership thing. If you demonstrate that you don't trust, then why should you expect them to trust you? Mm-hmm. All right? So it's important that you have systems and ways to make it effective for them so that they are engaged and they feel worthwhile, they feel like you value them. And that way, they're going to be motivated to do their job, but they don't have to receive just money in the process.
Right. It's so interesting you brought up the trust aspect, because we had a conversation yesterday in a meeting, and it spreads like wildfire.
Absolutely.
Right? It's goes so far beyond just retention. It's trust. It's empowering folks. It's helping them to find the thing that gives them gas, if you will. And all of that inevitably impacts the culture of the organization. And I think it probably also then goes back to turnover. So I think, if I remember correctly, turnover is something pretty important to you, right?
Well, it was my dissertation.
Okay.
Okay. And I actually wrote it. My dissertation was only about 200 pages long, but I also have written over a dozen articles on turnover and retention.
Mm-hmm.
And created a number of concepts regarding turnover and retention. And we help our clients. Truthfully, most of the time we help our clients aren't even aware that we're helping them with turnover.
Oh, wow.
Okay, because we don't couch it that way.
Sure.
What we do is we say we're here to help you improve and get your people to be as most effective as they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that just deals with engagement. And if somebody's leaving, and if you have a huge turnover rate, it's hard to get people in, because it typically takes 4 to 6 months before they actually know what it is they're doing in the first place. Right. So if you have an organization where people don't feel engaged, or you have a high turnover rate, then you spend a lot of time hiring, you spend a lot of time retaining, and what happens is they're going to leave anyhow.
Right, right. And historically, I would say that turnover, or people have the impression that turnover is bad. I don't think that's all that's cracked up to be.
I totally agree. Some turnover is good. I mean, one of the things that I've created is something called the turnover audit.
Okay.
Okay, which is, it's a 2x2 where we look at the level of satisfaction regarding their performance, whether they're working satisfactorily or not. But then we look at whether they're leaving for avoidable reasons or unavoidable reasons. So you have some turnover that happens, it's just going to happen no matter what you do, right? But some turnover is good. Why? Because what it does is sometimes your hiring process isn't working effectively, right? And you need them to leave because mm-hmm. they're not performing. Sometimes, and it's interesting, my clients don't get this initially, but sometimes you have top performers that are causing all kind of havoc within your culture, and it's much better if they leave, because then they can go down the street or they can work for your competitors and cause the havoc there. All right. And at the same time, usually what happens is there's a couple people that are right underneath them performance wise. Once that person leaves, then there's this competition to be the number one among the other people. So you have a small group of people who couldn't get there. Now they can and they do. All right. So what happens is you have this new positive energy that's going on within your organization instead of this negative energy that's going on. Another aspect is it just refreshes, because you bring people in from the outside and they have different ideas. Right. They've learned and brought things from different organizations. So it is really helpful. But one of the biggest keys is to realize that you can't control all turnover.
So let's talk about that a little bit. You just mentioned there are two types, right? There's avoidable and unavoidable. Let's start with the negative stuff first.
Okay.
So what are those unavoidable areas that we can't do anything about as a leader, or as a team member, or as an employer? What are those things where we just kind of go, okay, that's all right, and move on?
Well, you unfortunately have people that die, so that's definitely unavoidable. All right, you have people that retire,
sure.
And what's happening with the population now, there's a lot of retirement going on mm-hmm. because of the tension and frustration, so they figure, well, I'm of age to retire anyhow, so why don't I do it? Sometimes there's something with siblings or the family, all right, so what'll happen is they go with their spouse because their spouse got a job somewhere else and they have to move, and it's more important that they stay in the relationship with the spouse than stay in the relationship with you, so they move. So those are just some examples that go on with the really unavoidable turnover. Sometimes there's just illness, you know, so they have to go out. Sometimes they get pregnant, all right? You're not going to control that.
No.
So what happens in those types of situations, they get pregnant, they go on leave. A lot of times they don't come back, right? So that's also unavoidable to some extent. That's one of those border things where it depends on when your practices are and your policies are as to whether you can persuade them to come back, especially if you have childcare or you have different types of systems to help mm-hmm. them with the newborn.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't know that that's something that I would traditionally think about causing turnover, but you're spot on. Those are life situations. Hello, we can't help that.
That's right. So why try to deal with something that you have no control over?
Right.
It's hard enough to deal with those things that you do have control over, okay, let alone to try and deal with those things that you don't.
Right. So, okay, let's go to the positive or the things that we can do something about, because I think that's probably why most people are listening. How can I make an impact in this that creates a culture where people do want to stay, but maybe we're growing leaders to go lead somewhere else. And sometimes that's not a bad thing either, but we want to make sure we keep them as long as we need them. And we want to keep them when they're really engaged. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that we can do to avoid unnecessary turnover?
Well, that's one of the reasons I like the tools that we have and that we get from Target Training International, because we use all of the different tools, all right? So a lot of people just focus on the behavioral profile mm-hmm. because there's so many of them out there,
sure.
right? Some people get into what motivates people as well, right? But what we do is we look at the TriMetrics HD is marketed in a certain way. We actually look at it as a leadership dimension where there's 25 different leadership components mm-hmm. that we can look at. We also like to look at the emotional intelligence assessment. We look at, and a lot of people don't use this or realize the strength of this, but the stress assessment is really incredible to help, because there's certain things that you can use as symptomatic of issues within your organization by using the stress assessment and looking at that, especially because there's staff stress assessment and there is a leader stress assessment, because there are different stressors mm-hmm. that cause those things. So we like to look at all of those things, because there are so many ways that you can do it, right? You can do it initially when you're hiring somebody. Is it the right match? What a lot of people do is they hire somebody because they get along well in the interview with them, all right? Well, that's the worst reason, because within 4 to 5 months, you're going to, if they're not performing, you're going to hate them. You're not going to like them anymore. Mm-hmm. So you might as well not use likability as a major component. Yes, it can be part of it, but it shouldn't be everything, right? So it's got to be a good fit, right? The other thing you want to do is you want to do onboarding. So we love to use the onboarding or the comparison report to show people how to engage with each other from the beginning. It typically takes a couple months for a supervisor to realize who they have or what the individual is like. But when you have the onboarding assessment, what you can then do is you, from the very get-go, as part of the initiation mm-hmm. Type situation. Most organizations focus on healthcare and all those other things with onboarding, but you really need to onboarding the behaviors and the motivators and so that they communicate more effectively with each other. So we focus in on the entire system and the entire process. Then there's always the team building aspect. And there's the culture that you set up in your organization that have significant impacts. And we try to use all of those things to the extent our client will allow us to. A lot of times they don't like to because they look at the cost factor, which gets into another aspect. And that is, most people don't realize how much it costs to hire the wrong person. We actually have 3 different cost of wrong hire calculators. And the simplest one to use is it's going to cost anywhere from 25% to 200% of the person's first year compensation.
Ouch!
And compensation isn't just pay, all right? It's pay, it's benefits, any bonus structure. You might have stock options, right? On top of that, there are all types of other issues, because how much time is spent every time you hire somebody with what goes on in the hallways, or anymore what goes on over the internet, mm-hmm. okay, as far as who they're hiring and those types mm-hmm. of things. So it's important to realize that. So if you have a $50,000 a year job and there's $15,000 in benefits, that's $65,000, right? It's going to cost you anywhere from around, you know, $12,500, or more, all right, to $130,000 for $50,000 a year position. And that is real money.
Right? That makes people pay attention.
It does. It does. And people out there can calculate it themselves. Just take a position. Look at what it is and see how much you're losing, and then multiply it by the number of people in your organization that leave a year. And all of a sudden, we're talking about huge amounts of money.
Well, and yes, there are dollars and cents. I'm also thinking about what does that do to the team? How does turnover impact the culture of the organization? How does it impact the stress? You know, you started to mention it, but how does it impact the stress of the rest of the team, their manager? Who's taking on those responsibilities and those duties? What's that look like from a day-to-day perspective until you're able to find someone else? And then, as you mentioned earlier, well, you might find somebody, but you got another 4 to 6 months before they're up and running and, and really, you know, feeling like they've mastered that role and they can move it in an efficient and effective way. What are some of the things that you've seen in your experience? You've got a little bit of it.
Just a little.
What are some of the ways that you've seen that create an impact inside of an organization?
It's interesting. Most people don't realize the impact of somebody leaving or somebody new into a team. Because what it has the potential of doing is changing the entire dynamic of what's happening in the group. Let's say you have somebody who's a very, very assertive, a very, very strong individual that leaves. All of a sudden, there's this vacuum of ideas, intensity, those types of things. Or you have somebody all of a sudden who is coming into the group that may be very intense. Now you might have two people that are intense. So the other person who's been there wasn't in competition with anybody. Now all of a sudden, they are in competition with somebody else. So the entire team dynamic can shift just if one of the people in the group changes. So it's really interesting, a phenomenon. And this is an area, because we do a lot of team building exercises and we do a lot of team building just over the internet. And what I do, one of the interesting things about me, which is kind of weird, not only do I have an MBA and a PhD in business, but I actually have a master's in clinical psychology. So I was a practicing clinician in a former life.
Wow.
And so I use all of that in there, and it's interesting to watch the dynamics within a team. Even if it's a team of only two or three people, that it's really a group, right? There's a huge difference between a team and a group, right? But when we show our clients how to build groups into teams, because teams, what happens with a team, one of the definitions I use is when each person is trying to help each other out to improve, and then they work with each other. So it's the synergy of having a 2 + 2 = 5 or 6 or 7 type of thing. With a group, they might be in competition with each other and they do the exact opposite thing, all right, where they're in competition. And then what happens is you have a breakdown of things getting done, or you have a breakdown in communication, or you have somebody sabotaging. And that can happen when you have a new member coming in. Mm-hmm. The other aspect that happens is with the new member, they don't know the people in the group. So they also have to learn what's going on. And the tools that we use help that happen almost immediately. And that's one of the benefits, again, you know, of the great tools.
Right. Well, we appreciate that little commercial for the tools. I didn't pay you to say that, I promise.
No, I mean, that's why we work with TTI, because the tools are just phenomenal. And we've been able to master them. That's why we sell over 20,000, sometimes 25 or 30,000 assessments a year, okay, because they are that good and we are so good at showing our clients how to use it. It's not whether we can use them or not, it's whether our clients can use them.
Well, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. That's
Absolutely.
What we're here for. That's what you're here for. It's to create that transformation and help people's lives, you know, become better. So we're very lucky and honored that you're part of this.
Thank you.
And so as we're having this conversation, the thing that's floating in the back of my mind is, and so what? Because because right now in the world that we live and work in, it's an interesting space. You know, I just saw a recent job numbers, and we're hiring again. So basically what that tells me is we're creating more disruption in the marketplace because we are hiring. And I think it's so important for probably everyone listening, whether they're an individual who's thinking about if they're engaged in their current role, or if it's someone who's thinking about adding to their team, or maybe even letting go of someone on the team. And it's certainly top of mind for most leaders right now as we look at the generation that's leaving the workforce or thinking about retiring, and we're looking at the generation that's coming in. So can we talk a little bit about what are some of the solutions to turnover? You've mentioned a few, but if we kind of take a step back and we look at it not from our lens where we're in it every day,
right,
but from a business owner's lens, or from, hey, I'm an individual contributor inside of an organization, you know, how do we make an impact? And you know, we don't want to take it away. We don't want to take turnover away, because as you said, there's some good aspects to it. But what can we do about it? What can we do to make it hurt less?
Well, that's a great question, because one of the things that goes on in what we do with the turnover audit is it's important to identify the extent to which it is a problem in your organization, because it may not be a problem, all right? So, or the problem may be caused by something that you're not aware of. For example, with the turnover audit, there's one of those four boxes that's really important to get into, and that is your high performers who are leaving for controllable reasons, all right, which is typically leadership, all right? It's typically how the job is structured. It's typically what's happening within the organization. So the first step is to realize, do you have a turnover problem? You may not. For example, another concept that I created a number of years ago is something called optimal turnover, right? So you might have an optimal turnover rate, and the more you try to decrease it, the more cost. So let's just make it real simple and say the optimal turnover rate is about average for your industry, okay? And to the extent to which you try and get under that, let's say it's 30%. Let's say you're at 30%. Now, all of a sudden, you're spending a lot of time and money and effort to bring it down to 25% or bring it down to 20%. Well, the more you try to get it away from that optimal turnover area, right, the more costly it is and the less cost-effective it is. So you might be looking at the wrong problem. All right. The problem might be, well, you're at that optimal level now. Maybe what we need to do is we need to turn it around and look at enhancement systems within the organization. Maybe things that we can do to help our people perform better. Maybe we can do things that help them better interact and communicate with each other instead of worrying about turnover. Mm. Right. Because what will happen is what you're dealing with at that point is you're dealing with typically the biggest issues and the biggest problems, right, that's going on in an organization. Another thing that really is important, and most people don't realize this, and one of the things that I looked at in my dissertation and is definitely true, right, one of the most important factors to determine whether somebody's going to leave or not is the extent to which they are committed to the organization and or they are committed to the profession. But you really want them to be committed to your organization. So what are you doing within systems in your organization to increase that commitment? Because once they are committed to you and the organization, the less likely they are even to entertain leaving, let alone leaving. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if you can stop them from looking, and even if there are headhunters out there trying to get them and pull them away, if they're committed to your organization for whatever reason that is, right, then all of a sudden, that really helps decrease the turnover, right? And one of the things we haven't talked about yet, but is one of the key things, is the motivators or the driving forces that we assess. We focus more on the motivators, of course, there's six of them, and it's easier to get that message across and people to use.
In general, for those who don't know, it's the same thing. It's just, are we looking at it on a continuum,
right,
and both ends of it, or are we kind of keeping it that simple version of just the, you know, the core kind of things? And it's all about, in my words, so correct me if you feel differently. In my words,
I won't be correcting you, but I might have a difference of opinion.
It's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Yes. I mean, that's how we market the motivators. It's what are you passionate about? Mm-hmm. Okay, what is your passion? And one of the neat things about the motivators is that we measure six different aspects of what motivates somebody, but only one of them has anything to do with money. The other five have nothing to do with money. So if they're high, even if they're high on the one that deals with money, there's other aspects of that motivator other than money that motivate them. Number one, number two, even if that's their number one, they've got number two and number three as far as what also motivates them. So if you can build that into the job, all of a sudden, They're motivated. They're passionate because the job just feeds into what's naturally part of who they are. Mm-hmm. So if they're passionate, some people like to control things. So if you allow them to control, they like to accept more responsibility. That's great. I want you to be responsible.
Right, take this. Run with it.
Yes, yes, as long as you have the capabilities.
Right.
All right? But some people like to have a structure that they can work within. Or some people just like to have somebody telling them what to do. Well, if you have a job where somebody is bossing them around, then that's not what they like because they want to be the boss themselves, right? You're being counter what's going to be motivational, what's going to be passionate, all right, and what's going to get them out of bed and want to come to work every day, right? But in the same regards, you may also have somebody who is selfless, which is another one of the motivators. And the selflessness is good, especially if you have something. One of our largest clients is Keller Williams, and they have something called Keller Williams Cares. And we work with a lot of real estate companies, we work with a lot of other companies too, that have some social aspect where they give back to community. Well, instead of just indiscriminately asking somebody to do it, if they have a very, very high social and the selflessness, not only will they volunteer to do it, but they're going to love to do it, and it's going to be another way to get them to be committed to your organization. Plus, they're out there representing you in the environment, and it's not costing you anymore, and they're loving it. So it's all kinds of neat things that we can do, and we do, and we help our clients do because of these assessments. And as we know, the assessments that we use are, you know, incredibly accurate, which is very important. Most of them out there aren't accurate, right? But ours are very, very accurate, and we always debrief them, and we can demonstrate the accuracy of them. But once you have accurate assessments and you have systems, which we've developed, okay, to help our clients, all of a sudden it's really incredible because it just becomes natural. And it's kind of like they don't even think about it anymore, especially the extent to which you can build it into their job and it's part of who they are at work.
Well, and I think that's such an aha moment for so many. It's not all about the money. And when we put some data and some science behind it and say, so much so that looking at the six different areas we measure, only one of those six,
right?
To me, that just seems like such an easy spot to start working on if I'm inside of an organization and going, okay, how do I keep my team engaged? It's, well, first I got to figure out who's on my team and what motivates them. And then if I can get creative or intentional about finding out those things and then finding ways to connect that, it also, to me, feels like, yes, it's going to help with turnover. It's also going to help with engagement. And as you said, it's going to help on the bottom line because it's not technically costing you any
And it's
money.
Going to help with performance too because you'll be motivated to do a better job, right? So it's not just the retention aspect. It's the performance aspect that goes along with it. And it's interesting. A lot of people, the behavior profile that we use in TTI has is called the DISC, all right? And a lot of people think that the DISC is a personality profile. It is not. It's a behavioral profile, right? So, and there are so many of them out there, and you need to be, if you're using a DISC or a behavioral profile, you need to make sure it's accurate. But it's really important to realize that the motivation, tapping the motivation, you can get an idea from the DISC what they're going to be motivated by, but you really need to have an assessment that looks at what's motivational for them or what's really passionate for them. And there's really two assessments that TTI has, not just the motivators and the driving forces, but the stress also looks at what's motivational for them, because what happens with that is you really have a really good idea what's stressful for them. And if it's negatively stressful for them, it's definitely not positively motivational for them, right? A little stress is a good thing. That's what research has demonstrated. But too much stress just gets people not to take risks, not to do things. They slow down. They don't make decisions. There's all kinds of negative aspects when there's just too much stress.
I mean, that makes sense. If I think about the way that I function when I'm stressed, it's not good. It's not optimal. So in thinking about these different aspects, okay, so now we've got some tools, we got some things that we can do in the moment.
Right.
Let's face it, turnover is inevitable. When it happens, what do we do on the other side, right? So is there anything we can learn from people leaving?
Well, one of the interesting things that goes on here, and most organizations assume this, even though they know it's not true, they assume that when somebody tells you that why they're leaving, that they're telling you the truth. And most people don't want to burn the bridge when they leave, so they basically tell you, I got a job and it's paid more. That's why a lot of people think it's the money that's causing them to leave. They rarely are they going to tell you you're a lousy boss, all right, or it's the leadership or it's the organization, especially if you're talking to the CEO, you know, or somebody fairly high up in the organization, right? But what is really helpful is to have a true exit interview where you have, and we don't do that this much, I wish our clients would want us to do it more, is to actually hire another organization.
So a third party.
A third party to go out and to ask people why they really left. And there's ways to ask those questions in a way that they will actually tell you the truth. Right? Because a lot of times they don't want to tell you the truth anyhow. But there's ways to do that. And when we have done exit interviews, we're pretty good at that. And then you get a much better picture of why they've left. Another one is to do a 360, you know, on your leadership within the organization. So we have a 360 that we can do as well. But really the key is to find out the true reason why they left. You might find that's uncontrollable, even though they said it was controllable.
Right.
You might find out that there's something else going on. You might find out that there's just something psychological that's going on for the person and they just need to take
a
rest.
It's not a good fit.
Yeah, they just need to chill out, you know, for a little while and not worry about work.
And I think that's good advice for sure. We can't control it all. There are some things that are outside of that.
And intense D's think that they can, okay? But
I know nothing about this.
Yeah,
Michael.
I know neither of us do. So you can't. And it's important to be realistic and really understand mm-hmm. what you do have control over. It's hard enough to deal with the things that we do have control over, let alone to try to control those things that we have no control over.
Yep, let's just leave it at that,
okay.
Right?
Okay, all right.
So I can't believe it. We're coming up on our stop time, and I just want to thank you so much for your passion and your time and your expertise. So as we wind down, what's the one thing that you want people to take away from this conversation, feeling different or more confident about when they think about turnover, but retention?
To me, the one thing is just to realize what you do have control over and to focus on that one thing that you have control over. I'm going to give you two, even though you only asked for one. The other one is to really make sure that you have a good fit when you're hiring somebody. And it's not just when you're hiring somebody new, but the same dynamic needs to go on when you're realigning somebody within your organization, and most organizations don't do that. They just take a good technician and ask them to be a leader, and that is one of the worst ways to identify who is going to be the best person. You've just taken somebody who's really good at doing what they do, and now you've put them in a situation where they might not have a clue, right? And what happens then if you set them up for failure? So the two things would be, what do you really have control over, and to really look at the hiring, whether it's new or whether it's reassignment within the organization.
Brilliant. And I think those two are things people can kind of start wrapping their arms,
absolutely.
Arms around.
Well, they need to, and hopefully they can. So it is a challenge.
It's
like anything else. It's easy to talk about it. It's another thing to do it. And that's why organizations have consultants and they bring people in who are knowledgeable to help them.
I couldn't say it better myself. Well, thank you so much,
Michael, for your time.
And thank all of you for joining us for another episode of Working Progress. We hope that you'll join us again for our next episode coming out in just a few months. We'll see you then.